I'm Jed Lipinski. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Last time the Yanks were down 0-3 in a World Series, 1976. They ended up getting swept, and then you were just telling me they get swept by the Reds. And then in the offseason, what'd they do?
They got Reggie.
Okay.
And then they went back-to-back.
Okay. Last offseason, after they missed the playoffs, they got Soto.
Yeah.
There is no bigger move than that. Yeah. What do the Yankees do if they fall short? I mean, when you get pumped up, it's not over yet, but just off the heels of the last time they were down 0-3 in a World Series, they made the big move. What, like, where do you go from Soto? There is nowhere to go but...
Well, you got to retain him, and that's going to be tough, but I think that they will, and they're going to try, but you got to start with that. Is it Sasaki? Pardon me, I honestly forget the young man's name. He's a young... A matter of fact, he's not even 25 years of age. There's a Japanese pitcher. No, pitcher.
Oh, okay.
That you guys might be kicking the tires on. The Dodgers are interested. The Giants, the Yankees. Now, he's young, so because he's not 25 or 26, whatever that that line is for the Japanese players, the contract is very low. So he's only, and the posting fee's different. So, and he wants to come here. And if he gets the release, the word is he wants to be a Yankee. All right, whatever. But you can do that. You can add Soto. You can obviously unleash or retain Soto, unleash Jason Dominguez. I don't really know what the other big ticket move is, except that Volpe would have to get better, Wells would have to get better, and you got to find a first baseman.
Right. Well, maybe it's the opposite of the big ticket move. They let Soto go, or they lose Soto and actually build a team. Like, it's not that the Yankees are lacking in stars, like maybe it was, I don't remember, in 76 or whatever it was, but...
76, you had Nettles, you had Pinella. Yeah. I don't think Bucky Dent was there yet.
But they got
you
Reggie,
had Thurman, of course.
They got Reggie the big piece to put them over
Roy
the top,
White,
and he did.
You know those guys.
They're not... This is not a team that's missing one big piece. They're missing the little things. Mm-hmm. They're missing ball players, guys that can go first to third, guys that can put the ball in play and move a runner over. And I'm not just talking about small ball versus the long ball. Like, we all know how damaging the long ball can be, but there lacks a balance with the Yankees, and it's been like that for a while. They've tried to adjust. Volpe was supposed to be one of those guys.
Yeah.
Well, if he's not putting the ball in play and getting the job done, well, then who is that guy? And by the way, he's in the bottom of the order anyway.
Last night he wasn't.
Yeah, where
not the last couple of games. They bumped him up.
Yeah, I get it. Well, they really don't have any better options.
That's kind of even more the point. Think about it.
Rizzo's been, you know.
I mean, Rizzo just he just looks like he's pretty much finished. I thought he should have caught that pop-up, by the way.
Yeah. You can't let that drop.
I'm not saying it's easy there, you know, but I think he's going to retire. You know, he looks thicker, a little slower. And he's had a couple of hits. I'm not trying to disparage. He had a good career, but you can't go back with Rizzo next season.
Right, but it also then looks to, okay, well, catcher, still an unknown. Like, yeah, okay, we believe in Wells, but still unknown. Second base is going to be somebody new. And maybe that's a spot where you go get a ball player.
Yeah.
You're going to get a little less offensive.
I'd take Iglesias on there. I know that sounds nuts. I would take Iglesias. Yeah. Maybe not play him every day, but I'd love for it. That's the kind of guy
I want
on the Yanks. Now I don't want McNeil. Now, there was a point where I thought maybe I'd swap, you know, our guy for your guy. I don't want McGee.
Yeah, okay. Anyway, point is, you get a second. The Yankees need help. At first, they're going to need a first baseman, going to need a second baseman. You're going to live with Volpe again and maybe potential growing pains.
Unless you get a shortstop and move Volpe to second.
Yeah.
Or put Jazz at short.
Yeah. I mean, there are some free agent third basemen.
Uh-huh.
All right. So, then we can maybe figure that out. But it's going to be Judge in the outfield, see what happens with Soto. Left field, you're going to go Dominguez. And again, there's an unknown there. As long as Stanton is here, and if you're under the assumption of bringing back Soto, like, I think this is the team, and pitching hasn't been the problem. Like, it's not like, oh, well, they need to go up. Pitching has not been, the starts haven't been great from their starters in this series outside of Garrett Cole, but that's not the problem.
No.
There's just something off with the way this team has been built. It's why I said I would have made a change after the 2021 season, and here we are. I mean, the Yankees are in the World Series. They've been to an ALCS in 2022. They got swept. They're now in the World Series on the verge of getting swept. So they're good, but not good enough. What's missing with this Yankees
team? I think
team?
The ability to create runs when the thumpers aren't thumping. I think I'd probably start with that. And I think that's pretty much what you're saying when you say a lack of ball players. I think that's what you mean. That's what I mean. You know, guys that can, you know, foul line to foul line, run, score from first on doubles. I mean, score from second on singles, go first to third, as you said. You know, make the savvy, tough, athletic defensive play, whether it's in, keeping a ball in the infield or keeping a ball from getting to the wall in the outfield. There's a lot of ways the Yankees can improve.
Maybe those things that analytics aren't accounting for.
Yeah, I don't think the Yankees develop players well at all. I think that that's one of their biggest issues. I think organizationally the Yankees have many problems.
Tyler is calling from East Haven. What's up, Tyler?
With player development. Hey, buddy.
Hey, guys. How's it going? Quick things. You know, obviously Yankees are playing terrible, but I don't want to be that fan and say it's over.
No, it's not.
But just, I know it's not, but, you know, if we'll just say lose tonight, right back to the main topic is Brian Cashman. He was four games away from being like the greatest GM again, but he is one game away from being the worst GM again, in my opinion.
Worst,
but you know what I mean. Like, okay. The topic was, oh, Cashman needs this, Cashman needs to do that.
Yeah.
And he was four games away, and now he's done. And then, you know, the closest parade I'll get to see in the next couple of years probably will be the Macy's Thanksgiving parade in New York. Like, it's terrible.
Well, for the Yankee fan, yes, maybe. And thank you for the call, Tyler. Yeah, well, there might
be. You ever go to Thanksgiving Day parade?
I never did.
I went twice.
I am not opposed to it. How was it?
Awesome.
You had good seats?
No, but I went once with my mom and dad, my sister. I was probably about seven. I remember Rocky. Remember most of the floats?
Yeah.
Snoopy.
Kermit was my favorite.
Kermit was great. My favorite, and then Santa at the end. My favorite thing was they had this guy actually like in a Rocky robe, and he was supposed to be a Rocky, just no float, just walking the streets training. I remember that, you know, 1982, whatever it was.
I never went to the parade, but when I used to live on the Upper West Side, I remember, and I was, you know, one of my girlfriends lived up there, so I would go see her on the morning of Thanksgiving, and I saw the floats.
Yeah, we used to go watch him get blown. That was the second time I went.
I saw that. One night I went with Moose, too, the night before. Aww. And I remember seeing it, but I'll tell you a little secret. I'm afraid of those things.
Why?
They're big. Yeah.
They're big.
Something about that. Even as a kid, I was always afraid of the big pool floats, like an alligator float.
Really?
In the pool. Yeah, I don't know. It just was, they were, I don't know. I'm just not into into those floats. Dennis is calling from Pennsylvania. What's up, Dennis?
Hey, want to talk Yankees. I was hoping they would come out with more energy. Mm. Schmidt pitched horrible last night. And like John Sterling said, they didn't hit.
Okay. And thank you for the call, Dennis. Great energy yourself.
You may run like haze, but you hit like bleep.
They didn't hit. I mean, you credit the Dodger pitching for that? Or is this more on the Yankees offense? I think there's probably a combination of the two.
I think you have to tip the cap. I do think that they've been...
Bueller was nasty last night.
Yeah, I think they've located their fastball well. I think the Yankees have been a little bit too passive. I gave you the stat last night. They let 24 four-seam fastballs that were called strikes go without swinging, which was the second most, including the regular season this entire year. The Nats had 27 back in May. So it's just a little bit of a breakdown with everything. You know, not making a play in the outfield, not scoring from second on a base hit. Probably shouldn't send him there because it's Stanton as well. So bad coaching, brutal decisions by Boone in game one. I mean, you name it, they've done stuff wrong.
By the way, twice in this series, Gleyber Torres has made the last out with Soto looming on deck in a potential damage situation. Last night, you just needed to get Soto up. Win or lose, get Soto up in that spot.
I was trying. I know what you said you're going to swing the bat. I'm going to give him a pass on. He had a pretty good at-bat, and that bat was taken out of his hands. That was not even close to being a strike.
But that was a different at-bat.
You're talking about the one before that. I got you.
Before it, yes. He was frustrated with that. I'm talking about the ninth inning.
Yeah, I know.
When the Yankees started to rally a little bit.
I know.
And Torres came up and, right? I mean, I forget the exact log, but twice he made the last out. Game two, same thing. You're just saying, oh my God, if they get it to Soto, they're going to have a shot. And he didn't. Man, Gleyber, again, like, he's a good offensive player and he's been a terrific offensive player down the stretch here, and specifically in the postseason. But in the biggest of spots, like leading off the game, getting on is one thing.
Mm-hmm.
Or, all right, in a mid game is one thing. When the game's on the line in the ninth and your job is to get on and extend it to give Soto a chance, you've got to do it. And twice now, he has failed to do so. Jeff is in Hamilton, New Jersey. What's up, Jeff?
Hey, guys. How are you today?
Good. What's up?
Hey, Jeff.
I'm going to just make a few quick points. First of all, if you let me just quickly. First of all, Yankees are getting swept. This series is over. Mm. Dodgers are, in fact, the better team. It is what it is. Second thing, I agree with what Sal said. This team needs a lot of different moves. I don't think Soto is going to be back. I think they're going to try, but I really think the money needs to be spread out. There are more pieces. As we've seen, this team cannot live on the long ball, feast or famine. And the last point, and I've called you guys a bunch of times, I really do think, I don't think it's going to happen, but I do think Boone needs to go. I think that Boone put this team in a hole early in this season. I think the players are smart enough to realize this guy is not exactly the greatest manager. I know he's probably coming back because they're in the World Series, even though we all know that the Yankees didn't exactly have to play the toughest teams. I think if they would have played Baltimore, they wouldn't even gotten this far. Boone is not a good manager. I just don't think he's the answer. I don't think he's going to be gone, but I do think they need a guy that is a better in-game manager, not just managing the clubhouse, but making decisions. Because, like, BT, you said it. Like, he ruined the team on the first game.
Yeah, and I had an awful game
over.
One.
It's over. And you know what? It's hard to come back from that. And if you're a player, we've all played sports. We've had coaches. You know the coaches that you know make good decisions. When you have a coach or manager as a player, and I've never played professional ball, but I've played high school ball, as you guys probably did. When they make decisions, and you as a player are like, "What are you doing?" You're kind of losing.
You know what though, Jeff? Now hold on. Thanks for the call, Jeff. Those are two very different things. You know the job that Boone has done so far in the World Series and all the other things we've talked about with Boone over the years, and how his players perceive him. I think you have to understand these players are young. All right, so the relationship that they have, and not just with Boone and the Yankees, really throughout baseball, there's a couple of gut managers left, but not many, very reliant on the numbers. These young kids that come through the system understand that there is a mathematical equation to most of, if not almost, every one of these decisions. So I think that they're conditioned and programmed early. Not to say, dude, what is Boney doing or what is this guy doing here? I think it's like, well, that's what the number said. And because every conversation, every hitting meeting.
Roberts is the same damn thing.
He is.
You could see he's even worse.
Yeah, in some spots. Every pitching meeting, it's all analytically driven. And all the matchups are dictated by numbers. So their minds are conditioned to only think one way. Now, back in the day, I mean, well, you know, maybe, I don't know, not that Reggie and Goose would hang out, but Goose and Nettles seemed like they did hang out. Goose and Nettles are having a few beers at the hotel bar. Yeah, I mean, could they maybe say, oh, what is Billy doing here? Because there was no analytics. I don't think that applies today. I think the only problem with a player and his manager is if the manager's lazy, which Boone clearly is not, or the manager's a jerk. And I think that they really like Aaron Boone.
Yeah,
I really do.
And the idea of Boone getting, like,
no,
I heard some of that.
Fired.
Come on now. What do we? Boone might be one of them. It's not the main reason.
It's
insignificant.
From game one of the series.
No, I'm saying the series, down 0-3. And even game one, there's a litany. By the way, everybody got on Boone for Cortez. Everybody's hitting. Freddie Freeman's hitting home runs off of everybody. Guys that have pitched more recently than a month. How's Clark Schmidt done against Freddie Freeman? I mean, think about it. Freddie Freeman's hitting home runs off of everybody. It's not Rodon, same thing. Lefty. Oh, Carlos Rodon, $160 million man. Freddie Freeman took his ass deep, too. So it's not just, Cortez, you brought in a bad spot. Again, you could say that you blame Boone for game one, sure.
Yeah, yeah. He was bad.
Yeah, I don't think he had a good game in particular. I'm not picking on just that Cortez thing. I stand by this, as we said yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
He was not good in game one, and I don't think it's been a great series overall. Bottom line is they're not hitting. It's not his fault.
You know, there were very few. No, you got hit to win. I'm with you on that. There were very few times last night that I thought the Yanks were going to win. I thought they were going to win going into the game. And the other time, you don't even mention it because you almost forget about, when Leiter came in, got that little five-hopper back to the mound and got out of trouble.
Yeah, all night they were doing at the pen. But yes, Leiter specifically.
And if I remember right, the count was 3-1. He was a hit a ball away from, I believe, walking in a run, and he threw a cutter, made a 3-2, and then he got the little tapper back to the mound. Like, when that happened, I'm like, okay, disaster averted. They're going to find a way to hit, and they just didn't.
Carl is in Virginia. What's up, Carl? Carl, you there?
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I'm Jed Lipinski. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, Carl, what's happening, bud?
What happened?
No.
Kyle is calling from Long Island. What's up, Kyle? What is going on here? All right, thank you. We can take a break here.
Did you see Carl's question?
Yeah, well, that's why Hoff was saying, go to Carl. So I go to Carl, and he's not there. We have an issue with the phones now? Or what's going
on? Probably something. I think it's Hoff, so I think something's up with
the phones.
Oh,
it should be fixed now. That's great. Those two guys are screwed.
Joe, but did you hear what he wanted to say? Yeah, he wanted to know why the Yankees don't hit more foul balls. Hoff, what was he serious? Was it like an approach thing?
Oh, he was very serious.
Oh, God.
Yeah, we'll see if he can get
more
back up.
That is a good question. Guys, why don't the Yankees foul off more balls?
You mean to stay alive or, like, rip them down the line with good, strong, aggressive swings?
Yeah, just stay alive. They should foul more balls off.
Yeah, I guess you're not wrong. Is there? You get find a stat. There's a stat for
Joe
that.
Joe is calling from Wappingers Falls. What's up, Joe?
Jeez.
Foul balls.
Hey, good morning, gentlemen. How are you today?
Yeah,
hey,
great.
Joe.
So, you know, BC, I'm going to go to your point before about the organizational thing, because think back a few years ago. They brought in DJ, right? They wanted that contact guy. They brought in Jazz. They got a guy that can run. You got a guy like Rizzo, who's, you know, an on-base guy. So they have tried to change the approach. They brought the guys in. But there's something. There's something in this organization that these guys show up here, and they're not the same players they were. I mean, you watch batting averages drop. You watch the strikeouts go up.
Yep.
I mean, the approach is just unbelievable. You know, even the pitching. Even the pitchers are not the same. Now, granted, Garrett's getting a little older. I get that. He's not the same guy he was in Houston. He's not the same dominant 7 innings, 8 innings, give me the ball, take it to the end type guy.
Well, last year he was that guy.
He was, but he's not now. And maybe it's the injury this year. Maybe there's something else going on.
Yeah.
But there's something in this organization, and it's more towards the hitting.
Yep.
There's something going on when they bring these guys up, and we see it with the prospects. They never become what they're supposed to become.
Never.
We haven't had a big-time guy since what? Since Pettit. I mean, who's the last guy? Pettit? Rivera? I mean, those are the last guys that they brought up to the organization, and they wanted to trade Rivera back then. But, you know, what is going on with this organization? That's what I want to look at.
Well,
I don't
think about this, Joe.
I'd love to blame.
Yeah, and you mentioned, thanks for the call, you mentioned DJ, you mentioned Jazz, and you mentioned Rizzo. I think Jazz has to refine a couple of things, but we all know what vintage DJ and even vintage Rizzo represented. Good bat-to-ball skills, high average, hit the ball foul pole to foul pole, and obviously Jazz is more dynamic, quick twitch, and a little bit of everything. And, I know that the Yankees know that they need to get some of those guys here, which is why they go out and they get them. My problem is, what are they teaching these kids the moment they get in the system? Rookie ball, low A, high A, and then obviously beyond that. I just think it is a bit of a systematic failure. Like, their hitting approach is not, I don't think it's what it should be.
Yeah, well, clearly something is off, because it's the same thing every year. With Soto, without Soto, it's the same thing. Last year they weren't in the postseason, this year in the postseason. Okay, they get to the World Series, and I think in large part due to the lack of quality competition in the American League, now they're here and they're down 0-3 in the World Series. When they were in the ALCS a couple years ago, they got swept by the Astros, who are a far better team. Right, so even when the Yankees have been in the 2021, same thing, like, they've progressively gotten worse. The result this year was better because they finally got back to a World Series, but now you're seeing down 0-3, like, it's not even a series at the moment. So could be. So something is wrong.
Yeah.
And I do think it's the way that the team is built, with the type of players or what they're teaching in the farm system. That's the issue. By the way, real quick, I said Gleyber has made the last out twice in this series. It's twice this postseason. I had to go back and look it up because I knew
what
I
was the other game there. Hold on.
Kansas City.
Oh, early.
The first loss that the only loss that they had to Kansas City, mm-hmm. Glaber came up with a man on in the ninth, down two, and made the last out.
Got it.
And you're just thinking, get a Soto there, a chance he can win a game with one swing. Last night, same thing. Hey, even though we're down, get on base. Soto comes up, can tie the game with one swing. Twice. Now, again, I mean, it's maybe nitpicking a little.
It's hard hitting. It's hard.
But in the ninth, you're just saying, Glaber, get on to pass the baton to Soto and or Judge.
You know what's nuts about this? Like, we talk about Judge and, you know, basically 50% strikeout rate, his chase rate is weird. It's awful. I mean, all the numbers are awful. But he's actually, if Torres would have done his job in several spots, and he's had a good postseason, but to your point, just to get the baton to Soto, there's a chance that Judge could look even worse because there's been two or three big spots where if it went that way, he was going to be in the batter's box with a chance to win it. Now, maybe he did it. It changed everything. Could have gotten worse.
Even last night, I'm thinking, wow, this might come down to Judge again with two on.
And do you have confidence in him right now?
I admit that I still am scared of him. Yes.
You scared of him like he's going to do damage?
Yes.
From a Yankee perspective?
From a Yankee perspective, I still want him up. I know what you're saying. Like,
want him up or hope that he's going to recalibrate? I don't know if I want him up right now.
From a rooting against the Yankees perspective, I'm scared. Now, I'm not as scared of Soto. Put it this way. I'm just as scared, more scared of Judge than I am even Giancarlo. And that doesn't make sense based on the postseason, but just overall, dude, when you're as good as Judge, it's just a matter of time. Maybe if not maybe the Class A homer is I'm hanging on to that, but I saw it. Prior to that, there was no reason to believe it.
Mm-hmm.
Then he did that. I told you at that moment, I was like, for the first time, hey, maybe this team can win the World Series. And then obviously it's been nothing since for Aaron Judge. BT and Sal on the Fan, more your calls when we come back. We'll have Jermaine Illuminor this hour as well. Can I tell you one thing that I'm sick of? BT and Sal back on the Fan. We'll get back to your calls. We'll have Jermaine Illuminor coming up in just a little bit. One thing that I am sick of, the comparisons with Freeman's home run in game one versus Kirk Gibson. Like, dude, it's
I hear you, but did you see the timestamp? Did you see the location?
On.
I mean, it was pretty amazing.
All right, but as far as importance or like situation, Freddie Freeman, I know he's not 100% healthy.
Uh-huh.
He's not Kirk Gibson,
mm-hmm.
who was pinch hitting, hobbled against the best closer in the sport, against a team that many thought was superior.
Yeah.
Like, this is totally different. This is Freddie Freeman with the bases loaded, so the Yankees were already screwed. With the Yankees going with Nestor Cortez, who's one of their last guys out of the bat. Like, come on. Like, and I'm all for the big moment. Let's not minimize Kirk Gibson's all-time World Series home run. I did not feel that with Freddie Freeman's grand slam. Cool moment, sure. Not an all-time moment like Kirk Gibson.
Well, I mean, listen, how much of the Gibson call is who was on the call with Vin Scully?
Yeah.
We were younger. Maybe we process it differently. Maybe not, but I'm just giving you, counterpoints here. I mean, it's my team that got dealt the shot, so I'm not exactly sitting there for, what a cool moment in history. I'm actually pissed as hell.
No, but I like you making the counterpoint.
You know, think about this. Like, and you did see the timestamp, right?
Yes,
like, they were like 30 seconds
or
2 minutes, whatever it was, and it was almost at the same exact spot.
And one place I saw it was the exact same time, like 8:37.
I saw 8:37, 8:36. That's why I said about 30 seconds
to
a minute.
And another place I read it was a couple minutes off.
Freddie Freeman's a Hall of Famer. He's a Hall of Famer. And, it was the first walk-off grand slam in the history of the World Series, and it's Yankees-Dodgers.
Right. I mean, it was game one, I guess, too.
Pretty huge, man.
I'm trying to read through the play-by-play just to remember what it was in 88. But it was different to me back then.
And you're younger.
But also because of the improbability of Kirk Gibson, a hobbled player who, at least the way that they made it, that they built it up. Let's see. So the score at the time was 1-0.
Was that the score? 1-0?
I'm sorry. No, it was 4-3.
Yeah, I didn't think it was 1-0. Okay.
Right, 4-3. What the hell's going on? I'm not reading this thing right. Anyway.
What are you looking for? The transcript of Vin Scully's call? What are you looking for?
Yeah. It was 4-3. And then Gibson hit a 2-run homer to make it 5-4. So they were, still trailing in the game. It just, to me, felt different and more improbable. Now, maybe there are metrics that would prove my point, and I don't care about the analytics, but that moment Gibson hobbled clearly versus Eckersley down a run with one on game one, bottom of the ninth, felt a little bigger and more improbable that he would hit a home run versus Freddie Freeman, bases loaded against Cortez and the Yankees, even though they were down a run as well.
Well, just think about the visual. Then you have Tommy Lasorda jumping for joy. He's an all-time, you know, character and figure of the game. And I'm not saying Dave Roberts isn't somewhat accomplished. He's a champion, the condensed season back in 2020. But no, I think there's some things that would probably support what you say. There's other things where I'm like, man, that was nuts. And when I strip away the fact that my team got dealt that blow.
I mean, the A's won 104 games. The Dodgers won 94.
That A's team was insane.
Yeah, like, so you're talking about better teams.
And Gibson didn't start. Freddie Freeman started.
Correct. That's my point. Freddie Freeman's the three hitter on the best team in baseball.
Mm-hmm.
And he's facing Nestor Cortez. Kirk Gibson was off the bench, couldn't even run.
No, Lasorda said you have one swing in me. Well, do you have one swing?
Yeah, right.
One swing.
So couldn't even run
off
the bench, off of facing a team that was significantly better and the best closer in the game. Like, it's like, I get why people are trying.
What if that was off Mariano?
I mean, that's a different story. Now you're talking about all-time great. And probably you're not thinking Mariano's going to give up a home run. Cortez, I mean, before we could even really think about it, the ball was gone, but it's still like...
Because Freddie Freeman's a better player than Kirk Gibson. Kirk Gibson is revered throughout history, but Freddie Freeman is a no-doubt first-base Hall of Famer.
Correct.
Gibson was a good player.
He won an MVP, right?
I believe he has the one.
Okay, right.
But Freeman's numbers dwarf his. Not to disparage Gibson, but he wasn't Freddie Freeman.
Correct.
He wasn't even close.
And that's part of my point. Even if it were Luke Weaver, BT, I think that it would be more comparable than Eckersley, Gibson, under those circumstances, A's, Dodgers. Like, there's almost nobody in the world thought that that was going to happen, maybe outside of Kirk Gibson and Lasorda themselves. And even them, hey, do you have one swing in you?
Mm-hmm.
And this was Freddie Freeman, bases loaded, Cortez in the game, Yanks on the ropes, even with that lead. And the Dodgers are the better team. So it's just not, to me, like, enough with the comparison. I feel like it's forced almost.
Well, I mean, I get. I mean, maybe to some extent, whatever. I always enjoy the historical comparisons, whether you buy them or not. I thought it was interesting, but not over the top. What do you think Gibby's OPS was for his career?
800s?
Close. I mean, well, at what point?
Like 804, something like
815.
That. 815. Yeah, okay.
815, 255 home runs.
He was a good player.
Only had 1,500 hits.
Yeah.
I mean, now, he was hurt a lot. That was the whole thing with Kirk Gibson.
He was a good player. And
Freeman's
at that point,
unbelievable, though.
You know, Freddie Freeman's...
What's Freeman at here? Freddie's got already basically 2,300 hits.
By the way, why didn't the Yanks sign Freeman? Remember, it was him or Rizzo? They tried to trade for Matt Olson at the time. Yanks needed the first baseman.
For sure.
There was thought about Matt Olson.
They were who they wanted to trade for.
Didn't happen. Braves traded and extended.
Yeah.
Talk about Freddie Freeman. Didn't get him.
No. I don't know. I don't know how aggressive they were.
And the thought was that, he's not going to leave the Braves. Well, he did leave the Braves.
Yeah. He's.
Imagine how the Yankees' fortunes would be changed had they had Freddie Freeman as opposed to Anthony Rizzo. I'm not trying to knock Rizzo.
No,
I love his walk-off song.
I wish. But you know what's crazy, too? Like, a lot of these moves, I'm going to take it even further back from the last home run that you referenced with Gibby and the A's. Like, we romanticize and elevate and all the things that we do with figures from our youth, right? Are you telling me that Freddie Freeman's not better than Steve Garvey? Like, think about all the first basemen from that era.
Yeah, I think he is.
I think he's better than Steve Garvey. Jack Clark's playing first, Hernandez playing first in the NL still at that point. Like, I think Freddie Freeman was without question better than Steve Garvey.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's part of my point. Like, I get it. People are trying to draw the comparison. Oh, look at this happen on this. Like, come on, dude. It was such a different circumstance that it was more shocking. To me, it's just minimizing the significance of the moment from Kirk Gibson versus Eckersley in 88. This was a great moment, not on the level of that. We're going to talk some Giants with Jermaine Illuminor. This Giant call-in is brought to you by Town Fair Tire. Nobody beats Town Fair Tire. Nobody. Another hard-fought game last night, Jermaine, from your Giants, but another L. 2-6 now on the season. How would you rate your team's performance last night, Monday night in Pittsburgh?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not one to, try and get wins out of losses like that. So we lost. I give it a 1 out of 10, honestly. Yeah, we fought hard and stuff, but we didn't get the W, and that's what that matters at the end of the day.
What happened specifically, Jermaine, on that play? You know, you guys had a chance down the stretch. It looked like you were isolated there on Watt, who's just an absolute beast. You had your hands full all night with him, and I guess it was supposed to be some help on that play. Can you explain what happened on the strip sack there down the stretch?
Yeah, it was just miscommunication. You know, when the bullets were flying like that, it's in a hostile environment like that, and, you know, the quarterback has him on his plate. We all do. You know, it's just a symbol of miscommunication, you know. And so I was expecting one thing, but also me being the tackle I know I am and the player I want to become, I need to be able to make adjustments on the fly like that and realize things quicker, you know.
Yeah.
If I'm expecting a chip and I don't get that, even against TJ Watt, I need to be able to adjust to that. And, you know, it was a crappy set expecting help, but still I need to be able to adjust to that somehow. And, you know, it's going to be dirty and grimy and it's going to be ugly, but if I can just get DJ around, like if I can just get TJ around the quarterback and try and get DJ to step up, then, you know, we're not having this conversation right now, most likely. But yeah, I mean, it's football. Things happen, especially when you're going against guys like that.
Yeah. And by the way, what makes him such a beast, characteristic wise?
Yeah. I mean, you know, he's a good player. That's really all I have to say about that. I'm not going to sit here and freaking, you know, hype him up when you can go watch the tape and see what he did all night. He didn't do anything for 3.5 quarters, and he had one impact play. So, like I said, I'm confident. I said last week I want to be on the island with him. I was on the island with him for the majority of the game,
yeah.
And he didn't do a damn thing. So, you know, I'm not going to sit here and freaking sing his praises. I'm not like that, and I never will be.
I respect that. All right, so listen, Jermaine Illuminor, BT and Sal here on The Fan. Let me push this forward a little bit, big picture. Now, one of the things as pros that you guys have to do is you have to live in the moment. One of the things that we do, you know, as broadcasters, kind of push things forward. We can, because if we trip, it doesn't really matter. We're not playing. So we can look at the standings and the wild card and this and that. How do you guys now, 2-6 and a couple of tough losses, a couple of really tight ones, how do you guys not worry about winning 3 games in one day? Like, is that a tough juggle?
I think that as a pro and me being in this league as long as I've been and without being around a couple of winning teams and some really great ones and some really great players, I think the thing is, like, you can just focus on the day at hand. You can't focus on, I can't focus on tomorrow. I can't think about yesterday. I can't think about Sunday right now. All I can think about is Tuesday and how I can have the best Tuesday. And so, you know, if I do that and I maximize my day like that, then I'll be ready come Sunday.
You know, the record, Jermaine, BT and Sal talking with Jermaine Illuminor, the record is obviously not good, but I feel like you're better than the record. At some point, though, you guys have been in these close games. At some point, you got to start getting some dubs here. How frustrating is it when maybe you feel like you've played better than your record is overall?
Yeah, I mean, if you really look at the teams we play just as an offense, you know, there's really only been 2 teams where we really didn't have as much production as we wanted, and that was the Eagles and the Vikings, and we kind of just beat ourselves up in those games because we just didn't stick to our game plan and, you know, set things up the way we did against the other 6 teams, you know. So, like I said, I'm not in this to have little these little petty wins and look at these, we did this positively and all that, and then they lost. But, you know, the biggest thing is just trying to see what you did wrong and fix it for the next week. But I think we saw that, you know, this team can be a pretty damn good team as long as we just keep doing what we need to do and not kind of shoot ourselves in the foot.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's closer, again, than the record says, but unfortunately, the record is what it is. How about Van Roten after the game, Jermaine? What did he have to say to you guys trying to keep this thing together?
Yeah, I mean, GV is an old vet. You know, he's been doing this longer than some of us have been born. You know, GV is an older guy. He's been around the league for a while. He's been on some really good teams, and he's a really experienced person. And so, you know, he just told us we could stop by, like, kicking ourselves in the freaking ankle. You know, like, all the little penalties, obviously, I had a couple. You know, one of them, I mean, I'll take every time. I'm not going to let TJ get a free hit on the quarterback like that. It was a nice inside move, so I'll take a hard call, you know. But the little false start, I mean, you know, things happen on the road like that, but it's unacceptable. Yeah, just a little unacceptable things like that, like with behind the sticks too much. And we were still had a shot to win the game, and then at the end of the game, which was predicament that our defense helped us put us in, and on offense, Trey too was running the ball really good. We were running the ball and then really getting what it was the second ranked defense against the run. So, like I said, we can do what we want to do on offense as long as we stick to the game plan and really, keep them guessing instead of just trying to be one dimensional, because there's no offense in the NFL that can be one dimensional and win games.
Certainly not consistently winning games. Jermaine Illuminor, Beat Teen Sound on the Fan. So I think the first time we had you on was about 2 months ago or so, and you were a fairly new New York Giant. I think you've represented the locker room well. I think you're a smart guy. I think you're an accountable guy. And I think you're perfect to tell Giant fans why this team, forget about schematics, why this team has the character and the heart to pull out of this season moving forward. Why?
Yeah, I think that a lot of teams, given the way things have gone for us this year, we've had a lot of tight losses. The Bengals, the Commanders, the Cowboys, and now the Steelers. I'm not one to say we could even be 6-2, but that's just how the NFL is. And so I think every single week you see this team fighting, other than other years where maybe some people may have just kicked in the bucket. There's never going to be a game that we're not giving everything we have. And I can tell y'all from a meek standpoint, there's never going to be a game where I'm not giving everything I have. And you never have to worry about that with me or the offensive line or really anyone, any of the 22 starters on offense or defense. And so, does it suck losing? Yeah, but to go into Pittsburgh on Monday night and to take that to the wire, and if we're being honest, if they didn't have that punt return, I'm sure it would have been a completely different game. Just to add on Bell. And so, things like that happen, and you have to be able to adjust to that. But like I said, the fight on this team is it's contagious, and the intent on this team, you can definitely see that people want to win, and everyone's trying to do everything they can to win. There's a lot of people who are beat up, including myself, but that's not going to stop me from going out there Sunday and Monday, and I can say that for a lot of guys out there. So, like I said, we're not going to throw in the bucket. We're not going to freaking, feel sorry for ourselves. We're going to go out there against Washington and try to get that win, get the 3-6, and shoot, see what happens, and then play the Panthers, then have a bye, and then refresh, and then just try and go on a freaking run.
Yeah, there is still a path here for you guys, as you say, Jermaine, to go on a freaking run. It's just got to start turning around for you guys. One thing that I saw last night that I don't remember seeing at all in his 6 years, Daniel Jones visibly frustrated during that two-point conversion or after the failed two-point conversion. Can you explain what went on a little bit on that play? Was it just a botched play? What happened exactly on the two-point conversion?
Yeah, it's a play we practiced a couple times in like different variations, but when the bullets are flying like that, DJ just really wants to win at the end of the day, and he's sick and tired of losing too. He knows what type of QB he can be and what type of player he is, and given the time he needs, he can dice people up and do what he needs to do to help win the game. But he's just sick and tired of losing too, and I think that's the emotion of 6 years of having a good year here or not doing good here, and just constantly just. I think mediocrity brings the best out of people at the end of the day. And I say that because no one wants to be mediocre. And there comes a point in time where you're just like, enough's enough. Like, we got to get this figured out. And we all understand that everything's on the line. Like, we're in New York. It's the biggest media market in the country, one of the biggest in the world, honestly. And so, there's a lot of pressure that comes with that. And you have to be built different in order to play in this market, which I'm learning, and I always sound built different, so I'm able to handle this. But he's an emotional guy, but he's also the leader, and he also wants the best for this team. And so he is starting to get that now, and I think that it's only going to be better because of that. I feel like sometimes just to go through little losses like that in order to really put this thing together and really go on a run. And I mean, there's no team that I feel like we can't play with now. It's just about getting the win.
And then how about this next game as we look forward here, Jermaine? You talked about it. I mean, not only is it a home game, and you guys haven't been very good in front of the home crowd at Giant Stadium or MetLife Stadium, but also a division game. And you guys have also struggled in the division. How about the importance of this game coming up on Sunday here to trying to take care of business against the Commanders team, who's been a very good team this year?
Yeah, I think that one win can change the season. I've always believed that, and I'm going to stick to that. One win can change of season. And, you know, like I said, 2-6 sucks, but we're not out of it just yet. And you have to truly believe in what I'm saying or what Dave says to really stick with it, you know, because I know it's rough right now, especially being a fan. And trust me, I'm a player, and this sucks. But in order to get through this, we need to keep fighting, keep working. And like I said, no one's going to freaking give up and kick in the bucket. Like, we're going to go back there on Wednesday and start working again to see what we need to do to beat Washington, and then go to Germany, beat Carolina. Then we're 4-6 with, what, freaking 7 games left? See what happens.
Thank you so much, Jermaine, for your time. We appreciate it. Good luck on Sunday.
Of course. Appreciate it, Joe.
Yeah, you got it, you know, buddy. I do love his attitude.
Me too.
It sucks that they're 2-6. He deserves better, and I really do think they deserve better. It's a couple of bad decisions, couple of bad plays, maybe some bad luck. Last night it should have been a penalty called on that kick return.
Yep.
It was not.
Yep.
Now, again, it's not that. You know, and I think it's actually, to Jermaine's point, a good thing that Jones was frustrated. Like, we need to
see. It's about time we see. But, you know, it's good. I think Giant fans need that. I think it's too late.
I know. Well,
listen, we love Jermaine. It doesn't change our opinion on Daniel Jones. He's not the quarterback
now
on the team next year. I mean,
understood.
He's just not. So it is what it is. But
they could still win some games.
Yeah. Yeah, they could. They're going to beat Carolina. And, you know, I do think that the
optics. You think they could beat Washington Sunday? I mean, they could.
Yeah, I'm not going to say that they can't. What's the spread? I didn't even see it.
Me neither. I haven't looked at that yet.
Again, Commanders by 3.5, 4, whatever. I'll take a look. Here's the problem, potentially, with this weekend. Right up until this year, the Commanders were the one team in the division the last couple of years Giant fans and Giants could look at and say, all right, we're right there with you.
Right.
We know Dallas is better and Philly usually knocks us around, but the Commanders either win a tight one, tie, lose a tight one, whatever. Well, now they've got everything that the Giant fan wishes that they had. They're 6-2. They got a plus 69 point differential. The Giants are like minus 48. And they got a dynamic quarterback who very well could win an MVP or two down the road. So, I know that. And I do respect Jermaine coming on. That is the most thankless role. Like, who the hell wants to come on, especially with you and I?
Yeah,
we're going to ask questions. And this guy, you know, this young man committed to us at the beginning of the season. He's a stand-up, straight shooter. You know, he's been good. He's not been perfect, but he shouldn't bear the brunt of all the tough Giant questions. But
and he did do a good job for the most part last night against Watt.
He did.
Except
the one. Yeah. He did. Yeah. And we're not paying him. He very easily could say, you know what, guys? No, I'm done with this. No, you guys, I'm not going to do this. Why do I need to subject myself to these questions? I'm done. You guys talk about the Giants without me. He's a man, and he comes on every week and he does it the right way, and I truly respect that. But that doesn't mean that this season's good. It's not. The Giants are losing a lot. They're not scoring. Their quarterback didn't throw a touchdown last night. It's what it is.
All of their next 5 games,
yeah,
they're winnable football games.
Yeah, and hit me with the 5. So Commanders,
home against
Panthers,
Washington, yeah, at in Germany for Carolina.
Oh, that's right, Germany, yeah.
Home against the Bucs. I know the Bucs are good, but that's a winnable football game.
They have some injuries, the Bucs. Yep, go ahead.
At Dallas on Thanksgiving.
Yeah, I mean, they're not going to beat them, but all right.
Dallas. I mean,
the Dallas is going to win that game, but okay.
And home against New Orleans.
Yeah, I mean, you never know what you get with them.
But all right, let's say of those 5, I mean, 4-1, obviously you would need to try to get back into it. I don't think it's out of the realm, based on the way they've played the majority of the year. They're right there in these games.
And good enough to lose.
I know.
But almost never good enough to win.
But that's the problem. I mean, they're going to need... You're going to have those plays go right. You just can't be coming close enough. And, 2-7, 2-8. Like,
I mean, eventually, for me, that's already expired.
Yeah.
It's not year one for these guys. And I think Dable's coaching them up, and they're playing hard. And I get it. And they've got a couple of interesting pieces, but you are what you are. Parcells always said it. Right now, they're 2-6, and last year, they weren't very good. But we appreciate Jermaine. You know, he's, I bet you he's an awesome teammate.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I'm Jed Lipinski. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
In the fast-paced world of attacking, speed is everything. And that's where the Furon 7 Plus shines. Engineered for accuracy and precision at a rapid pace, it's your secret weapon on the pitch. Experience overall comfort and precise striking, even in the game's fastest moments. The nylon outsole, with its V-shaped stud configuration, is designed for firm ground, giving you the grip you need to outmaneuver your opponents. Step up your attacking game and learn more and purchase the Furon at NewBalance.com.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly!
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.